Hey, what's up, everybody? How we doing? This is the Spark Show DFS podcast. I am your host, Mark Sparky Lee. And today we're going to talk about the PGA Championship. I'm not going to do any kind of recap or anything. I'm kind of running behind today. So nothing on the last tournament. Nothing crazy going on. So we'll just hop right into the course that we're playing this week. Bethpage Black. It's in Farmingdale, New York. Which is in Long Island. It's a par 70, 7,432 yards. It can play a little bit longer than that on certain days. It was designed by A.W. Tillinghast and opened for play in 1936. It's the first public course to host a U.S. Open, and it hosted the U.S. Open back in 2002, 2009, and then 2012 and 2016. It hosted the Barclays, which was the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, and that's now the Northern Trust. The winners for those years, 2002 was Tiger Woods at 3-under. He was the only one to play under par. 2009 was Lucas Glover. He was 4-under. 2012, Nick Watney, 10-under. 2016, Patrick Reed at 9-under. And the difference between those two events from the U.S. Open and the Barclays was the seventh hole was a par 5 at the Barclays, and it was moved back to not crazy far back, but just to the next tee box back, and it was a par 5, and it played as a par 71 course. But this year for the PGA Championship, it's going to be moved back to a par 4 and a par 70. So I expect it to play kind of in between those scores, where it was 10-under, 9-under for the Barclays, and then 3-under, 4-under for the U.S. Open. So it'll probably, your winner is going to be right around 5, 6, 7 under, I would guess. It is known as one of the toughest courses in America. We got Poa Anna greens with Poa and ryegrass fairways. The greens are elevated a little bit, and there's not a whole lot of break to them. So they get the greens rolling pretty quick out here. I think they're just over, 11, 12 on the stimp meter, so they're going to be rolling pretty fast. And I think there's only two holes where the greens like break decently hard. So other than that, pretty flat. It's a long course. It's tough. Five of the par fours play at 478 yards and longer. It's decently fairly open, but the rough is not as long as it's going to be for the U.S. Opens, but it's going to be thick. And if you get outside of that, there is a little fescue you can get into. There's some big, nasty bunkers on this course where you're driving into. And on these elevated greens, a lot of them are protected by bunkers that are pretty deep. So bunker play is going to be crucial today or this week. The rough, like I said, is going to be 3.5-4 inches long. Not crazy long, but still pretty long and penal. The weather this week is going to start in the 50s. In the morning and then climb into the mid-60s. It's been colder there this week, but it's going to get a little bit warmer. There should be a little bit of wind. I think gust into the low to mid-teens, but nothing crazy. Maybe a little bit of rain spitting down, but probably not. This could change in the next couple days, so I would keep an eye on that. But there's been plenty of rain so far this year, so it's going to be a little bit softer. The conditions out there, ball's not going to roll out quite as much as it would. And it's played in the spring, early spring compared to, not really the early spring, but the spring compared to like August when it's usually played. So the conditions are, these are new conditions for this course that is played on 4 PGA Tour events, and it hasn't been played in May. So it's going to be, this is all, everything you hear about course conditions and how the course is going to play is pretty speculative at this point. So the main thing is the rough's healthier. The grass in the in August, in those later months in the summer, is going to be a little bit more dead. Everything's going to roll out more. But now you're going to have thicker, healthier green. Grass. So if that rough isn't quite as long, it's still going to play thick and hard to get out of. So you're going to want, accuracy is going to be key this week. The stats that I'm looking at, the highest correlation that I saw was birdie or better, which seems kind of weird because it's a course where, you know, 6 under could win it. So it's like, why would you need a birdie? You'd think you'd want a bogey avoidance guy. But for whatever reason, that type of player that gets a lot of birdie opportunities is a guy that does well here. And it kind of makes sense because you got to hit fairways, you got to hit greens, you got to give yourself scoring opportunities to get birdies or better. And that would be key at this kind of course because you have to keep it in the fairway. You have to get to these greens, and then you got to roll in putts. So just to be alive this week, you got to have a good birdie or better number. Strokes gained tee to green, and then a big emphasis of off the tee. Every year it seemed like from 2012, 2016, correlated pretty heavy with guys that are good off of the tee. So it must be just keeping it out of this rough is pretty huge, and I think that's going to be crucial again this year. Par 4 scoring is big, and then I threw in par 5 scoring as well, which is usually pretty big. Even though there's only 2 par 5s on this course, there's, you know, a bunch of these par 4s play like par 5, so they kind of bleed in together. So you're going to want to look at that stat as well. Driving distance, obviously, especially if it's going to be cooler, if the rough's going to be bad, if the conditions are going to be soft, you're going to want driving distance here. Bogey avoidance is always one to look at. And then proximity, for whatever reason, I can't even wrap my head around this, but proximity was one that popped up here. So I threw that in as well. The field this week is going to be stacked. There was 156 players, and it was going to be the first time in a major that the top 100 golfers in the world were all playing, but then Justin Thomas withdrew on Monday. There's also 20 PGA professionals, and they're all club pros. They're not going to have a snowball's chance in hell to win this or even top 10, top 20. So don't even look at those guys, really. John Daly's here. He's riding in a cart. That's going to be awesome. Probably smoking cigarettes and shooting whiskey. Let's see if he can make it to 12 under or 12 over. The strategy that I'm looking at here, there's when I was looking at odds to win, there's 24 golfers that are 1,000 to 1 to win. So those guys, a few other guys sprinkled in there that, like, betting wise and DFS wise, you don't even have to look at those guys. So this field gets narrowed down pretty quick to 120, 130 golfers. And I think with the depth, because you can get good guys down in the lower 8,000s even. So I think people are going to be real hesitant to take too many guys up at the top of this price tag. So if you want to go contrarian, I would go stars and scrubs. But, you know, there's so much depth to this that you can go any which way. And I think the ownership is going to be spread out pretty well. So you won't have to worry about that too much. Just make sure in the right spots that you play low ownership guys. It's a long course, like I said. Conditions soft. Rough's going to be tough. Temperature is going to be cooler. Maybe a little bit of wind. So I'm going to be looking at guys that have good driving distance and strokes gained off the tee. You know, guys that are accurate off the tee and long is going to be huge. Because if you can't bomb it out and you can't stay in the fairway, you're not going to be able to score here. So those are probably the key things I'm looking at. But I'm sure everybody this weekend is going to kind of lean towards that bomber narrative where, you know, they're going to take flyers on guys that are in the upper 6,000s just because they can pipe the ball. So that's going to be something to look at, that just because somebody can drive it well, there's going to be more people looking at them this week. The first group up here is the big dogs that we're going to look at. 9,000 and up on DraftKings. My first cash play out of these guys is Dustin Johnson at 11,100. And out of the 4 golfers above 10,000, there used to be 5 because Justin Thomas, but he withdrew. Out of the 4 guys, he just seems like the safest pick to me. Out of my stat model, he was, out of the last 2 years, he was the best golfer stats-wise for this course. a lot of guys are going to be building balanced lineups this week, so I feel like any which way you go up top, it's not going to be, if you start with Rory, you start with Brooks, you start with DJ, I think you're going to be fine there, and I don't see any one of those three getting too high owned. But Dustin Johnson's going to be my cash play, and probably you could slide him into GBPs and go contrarian with it. But he's, the stat model says he's the best here, and his course history would kind of agree with it. Where in 2012 at the Barclays, he was third. 2018 at the Barclays, he was, or 2016 at the Barclays, he was 18th. So third and 18th here, the last two times they've played on this course. And like I said, Koepka and Rory are right there next to him. I can't see too many people picking Tiger this week, but Koepka and Rory are going to eat into that ownership. And even, you know, it's a major, so there's going to be a lot of people that don't normally play DFS stuff that probably love Tiger and are just going to pick him. So out of those four guys, ownership's going to be spread out, especially with balanced lineups this week and people taking, you know, guys that are closer to 9,000 and 8,000. So the ownership's not going to be too much that you got to worry about here. But DJ is my favorite so far for cash. Next two guys, I really love these two, but I'm sticking them in cash because of their ownership potential to get way up there is going to be high. Because Ricky Fowler, 9,300, that's probably the top of the range where people are just going to hammer in, you know, the start of their lineups, or maybe the second guy in their lineup is going to be low 9,000s. But Ricky Fowler seems to be popular this week from everything that I've read and listened to. Just like DJ, he's got good course history here. He was 24th in 2012. He was 7th in 2016. And then out of his last 17 events where there was a cut, Ricky's made all 17 of those. So he just seems like he's got a crazy high floor. The next guy that I'm going with in cash plays is Tommy Fleetwood at 9,200, so just $100 below that. His birdie or better percentage isn't great this year, 128th. It's down from last year, but his bogey avoidance is at 11th. So he's still tee to green. He's still great. He's just not scoring as well, but he definitely has the potential to get back up there and score. He's fourth in strokes gained off the tee, which is probably the biggest thing that I'm looking at here. So that's kind of, that piqued my interest when I saw it, but he is going to be highly owned, I would assume, at this price tag. He's also a guy that can catch fire. Over the last year, out of guys in this field, per round, he shoots 5 strokes better than the average, more than anybody else. So his birdie or better percentage isn't great, but when he does start rolling in birdies, a lot of them follow. So he's a guy that, even though he has a high floor, he also has a crazy high ceiling. So I like him for cash plays as well. I'd like him for GPPs as well, but, you know, the ownership's too high, so that's going to eat into your winnings there possibly, but still not a bad pick there. My first GPP play for the big dogs is Rory at 10,900. And like I said, with DJ, Rory, and Koepka right all there, it's tough to kind of parse out where this ownership's fallen. So I went with DJ as my safe guy for cash and Rory as my upside guy for GPPs, especially because I feel like everybody is going to be, Brooks is the guy that just seems like he's the major killer. He's the defending champ, so there's a good chance that, you know, the average guy that doesn't play daily fantasy sports but will this week is going to pick Brooks over those top guys, especially because he's going to be cheaper. So I feel like Rory and DJ are going to get overlooked slightly for how good they are, but Rory's my GPP play here, and especially because his course history isn't quite as good. He was 24th in 2012 and 31st in 2016 on this course, so maybe that kind of scares people away too, but he's second in my stat model right behind Dustin Johnson, and he's the best driver on tour right now, which is huge here. So for a contrarian play going up at the top, Rory seems like a great pick for me. Another guy that's, you know, right next to that top, almost 10,000, 9,900, Justin Rose. I feel like with all the good names underneath, and he doesn't have the Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Tiger, Rory name, So I feel like people just aren't going to want to pick him. And because of his last four events, he's got two finishes outside of 60th place, but then two other ones inside of the top 10. So it seems like there's a lot of risk here. Last two times here, 2012, he was 46th. 2016, he was 31st. So that in itself is going to push people away again. But just earlier this year, he was the number one golfer in the world. He's top 20th in strokes gained tee to green, top 10 in strokes gained putting. So he might be one to think about if people aren't going to go there, especially for a GPP play. My last guy out of this range is John Rahm at 9,500. I felt really good about this pick at first, but then it seems like there's going to be some people on him. But I feel like he's quietly been killing it so far. His last 12 events, he has 10 finishes of 12th or better, and that dates back to the Tour Championship. So since then, he's been on an absolute tear. But it just seems like there's not a whole lot of talk around him. And I think especially when you look at the pricing, below him's Ricky, below him's Fleetwood, below him is Xander, Jason Day. I feel like people are going to look down there and see, like, those guys have more potential to win and they're cheaper, so I'm going to go there. And John Rahm doesn't have the temperament to win on the big stage. So if people go that way, then he could go low-owned, which would be nice, which I think the general public will kind of go that way. But he's second in strokes gained off the tee. He's top 20 in strokes gained tee to green, driving distance, birdie or better, bogey avoidance, par 5, par 4, and par 3 scoring. So he's exactly the build of golfer that I'm looking for this week, where it's somebody who is long off the tee, somebody who's going to be able to find fairways, and somebody who is an excellent scorer. So I feel like that sets up perfectly for this course, and he might be one of my favorite plays, especially if he's going to go low on this week. The next range here is the value plays. From, I'm looking at 7,400 to 8,900 on DraftKings. My first cash play is going to be, and I feel like everybody's on him this week, is Patrick Cantlay. He's 8,200. He's pretty well rested here. He's coming off of two back-to-back top 10 finishes, including a ninth place at the Masters, which for a hot second, when he made that eagle putt on 15, I believe, he was in first coming down the stretch, but ninth place there. He is 10th in strokes gained tee to green, 15th in driving distance, 3rd in scrambling, which could come in huge here with all this sand, 3rd in bogey avoidance, 1st in par 4 scoring this year. I could honestly, he's at 8,200. If he was priced at 9,000 or a little bit above, like 800 to 1,000 more than he is right now, it would kind of make sense. So it's weird that he's priced this low. So that's what I'm imagining from what I've heard and what I've read. He's going to go highly owned. So I love him as a cash play more so than GPP this week. Because if, you know, he goes really highly owned, then it could screw you over if you take him in a big pool and he doesn't do well, because you're going down with the ship there. But my next cash play is Sergio Garcia. He's at 7,900. He didn't do great at the Masters, which kind of gives me pause. He finished 66th there, I think, right next to Justin Rose. But right after that, he turned around and he finished 4th at Wells Fargo, which was a couple weeks ago. Back in 2012 was the last time he played at Bethpage Black, and he was 3rd. So he seems to be a good fit for this course, which he's great with the irons. He's 3rd in strokes gained approaching the green this year. He's 14th overall tee to green, and he's averaging just over 300 yards a drive, 11th in par 5 scoring. So long holes don't intimidate him. You know, he's pretty decent off the tee, and he's very good into the greens. So I think at this price tag, 7,900, a lot of people are going to pick him. He finished 3rd here in 2012 last time he played. He's going to be a popular pick. I love him in cash plays. guy run right underneath him that I like for cash plays as well is Ian Poulter, 7,600. He's a great fit for this course as well. He finished 12th at the Masters, 10th at the Heritage the next week. Yeah, he doesn't blow you away tee to green, but he's very consistent tee to green. I could see him, you know, favorably priced this week, getting up there too, especially with these balanced lineups. 7,600 where he's at too, you know, Ricky is going to be, you know, very, very highly owned through there. So I think he's a great cash play, GPP, you know, not quite as much, but still a good pick. The first GPP pick for the value category that I'm taking is, this is kind of just a shot in the dark because I don't know if he's really going to go low owned, but Matt Kuchar at 8,700. You know, this is one of the best years that he's had on tour. He is, last three events, 7th, 12th, and 2nd. But at this course, he's kind of struggled. 2012, he was 38th. 2016, he was 64th. He's 120th in driving distance. So I think people look at his driving distance and look at his course history and go, okay, you know, he's a great player, but he doesn't have that upside potential here. So people are going to kind of steer away from him just because there is that bomber narrative this week, which would make him a good contrarian play, especially because of how talented he is everywhere else. So if people want to go low on him this week, then I will definitely go high. So he's my first GPP play out of the value category. This next one, I started with Adam Scott, and he is, oh geez, what was he, 8,100? Somewhere around there. And then I went to Paul Casey because I feel like Paul Casey's better suited for this course. But then people were kind of talking about Paul Casey too. So I might go back to Adam Scott here. It's kind of all up in the air because I haven't heard anybody talking about Adam Scott. So I kind of like both of them for GPP plays this week. And they're right in this tier of high ownership. So Paul Casey, I feel like there's a lot of risk here, but there's so much upside that he's finished. He's got a win recently. He finished 4th recently, but he missed 2 of his last 4 cuts outside of that 1st and that 4th. So he's really risky, but people love taking the guy that can top 5. So it's going to be tough to see where he lands. He's right underneath Patrick Reed, who won here in 2016 at that Barclays event. And then Matsuyama's right above that, and people kind of love picking him too. So I think Paul Casey being at this top tier of a real high-owned range might get overlooked a little bit, but I have heard people talking about him, so I don't feel too confident that he's going to go low-owned, but he's got a lot of top five potential here, so I really like that pick. And then Adam Scott maybe as a flyer that nobody's talking about could be a great pick as well. But my last GPP play from the value category is Webb Simpson, who is just super consistent lately. He's got 4 top 20s in his last 5 events. So at 7,600, it seems like he should be priced a little bit higher, but he is 166 on tour in driving distance at 286 yards per drive, 120th in strokes gained off the tee. So I think that's kind of factored into him being low priced here. So I think if people see that too, they're going to undervalue him. So if everybody's just like Kuchar, if people are undervaluing him, they're so good everywhere else that, you know, they're consistently going to be making cuts and probably knocking on the door of a top 10 or top 20. So if they go low owned, I like them kind of a risky GPP play, even though they're not bombers like you would want here. The next category down is my sleeper picks that are 7,300 and under on DraftKings. My first pick for the cash plays is going to be Lucas Glover at 7,300. The 2009 US Open, 10 years ago, he won it. at 4 under, and it's going to play kind of like that, I could imagine, minus the rough conditions that they have. And it was slightly different time of the year then, but just because he did win it here before and people see him this low and he's been this consistent lately, that people are going to pick him at 7,300. So it's kind of a risky GPP play to take because his ownership's going to be so high, but cash play, he's going to be great in my eyes. He's had 5 finishes within the top 15 in his last 8 tournaments, and he's one of the best tee to green this year. But what I did see was that the Players' Championship within this stretch where he had all these top 15s, which is the biggest event he's played in all year because he didn't play at the Masters, he finished 116th. But it's kind of a tough course where you can easily blow up on, so that might play into it. But another thing might be just like Lucas Glover, if you throw him in all these little events, he's going to kill it because he's so good tee to green. But if you put a little bit of pressure on him, maybe he doesn't do so well, so that might be something to think about. But I still like him for a cash play. Johnny Vegas is my next one at 7,100. He's been playing really well, probably his best stretch of golf that we've seen him play on tour. 7 out of 8 events since the Waste Management, he's finished in the top 30. And he seems to be a great fit for this course when you look at his stats. He's 18th in driving distance, 8th in strokes gained off the tee. And his short game has been way better than it has been in the past. He's 29th in strokes gained around the green, which can really help you here because these greens are going to be hard to hit in regulation. So he's going to be hitting fairways, and when he does miss the green, he's going to help himself out by gaining strokes around there, so that's going to be good for him. In 2016, at this course, he finished 22nd. So it does seem to look like he's going to be a good fit for this course. So I would think that he continues to roll, and at 7,100, he's got, just real steady, consistent game, good floor, and even good ceiling here. So I could see him getting picked quite a bit. My last guy in this group is Thomas Peters. We haven't seen a whole lot of him over the course of the last year and even into this season, but he's had 6 starts this season so far. He hasn't finished worse than 30th in any of those starts, and he did play last week in the Byron Nelson and finished 23rd, which is a good sign. And then I looked at his majors from last year at the PGA Championship, which was, held in August, and not at this course. He finished 6th, tied for 6th. And then in the Open a little earlier in that year, he finished tied for 28th. So he's one of those guys that's not, he's a noticeable name, but not a huge name, and he's at 7,000. But if he can go into these big tournaments and finish top 30, top 10, and he's been on a consistent run here, he just seems like a no-brainer for me at 7,000 to play. So he's my other cash play out of this sleeper category. And then for my GPPs, my first one is Keegan Bradley at 7,200. Usually I put him in cash just because tee to green, he's so good, but then scoring, he's all over the place because he can't really putt. But I saw his 2012 and 2016 finish here was 76 and 53rd. So I feel like people just look at him as, oh, he's a cash play. He doesn't do well here. I'm not going to pick him. So that's why I kind of stuck him in GPP, because I think he could kind of be undervalued this week. He did win a PGA Championship back in 2011. He hasn't finished better than 43rd in his last 3 starts. So I think that kind of weighs into this whole Keegan Bradley might be undervalued here, but he does, when he does roll it well, he goes on tears, and he's going to be consistent because he's so good tee to green. So I like him as a GPP play this week and a cash play, really. My next guy for the GPPs is Aaron Wise, 7,100. He seemed like I got on right before the Masters because I can't remember what it was, but some of the stats were telling me like he's kind of due, and he could go on a tear here. And he was Top 20 at the Masters, top 20 at Wells Fargo, and he was the flavor of the month back then. Everybody was on him. And then he's coming into the Byron Nelson where he won last year, and then he finished 43rd place there last week. And then since then, I haven't really heard anything about him. But he's good off the tee. He's good at getting to the greens, and he's one of the best at birdie or better. So it's another guy at 7,100. If everybody's kind of getting off him, then he is. This is the perfect time to get back on, because Aaron Wise is a decently good fit for this course, and he's only 7,100, and he has two top 20s recently, including at the Masters. So that's always a good sign. My last GPP play out of the sleepers. Originally, I had Charles Howell III here because I thought this was, and then I had Gary Woodland up top too because he withdrew, I think, at the Wells Fargo with back injury. There's been a lot of guys withdrawn lately with injuries, and I think a lot of it is just because they don't shoot well, and then they're like, whatever, I'm just going to go prepare for the PGA Championship because it's a major. So I think you look at those guys and go, I can take a chance at them because they're probably not really hurt, and they just want to get out of there so they can get ready. So I looked at Gary Woodland, looked at Charles Howell III, especially because Charles Howell missed two cuts before he withdrew. So I was thinking, nobody's going to be on him. And on my stat model, he rates out extremely well. So you look at recent form and everything, and oh, he's got an injury scare. Everybody's going to steer clear of him. But I don't think that's going to be the case. So I got rid of Charles Howell. But it's probably going to bite me because he might play well here and he's going to be low-owned or something stupid. But instead of him, I plugged in Eddie Pepperell. He's made five straight cuts, hasn't been a world beater, but he finished third at the World Golf Championship in Mexico. Wait a minute, I'm reading that wrong. No, since the World Golf Championship in Mexico, he's made five straight cuts, but he did finish third at the Players, which is, you know, maybe even better. And at the Heritage, which was his most recent event in America, he finished 16th. So those are good signs. It's tough to tell with guys, these foreign guys, because we don't know too much about them. They play in weaker European tour fields, and we don't see them much over here. And with all the traveling, it's kind of hard to tell if they're playing their best game when they're over here. But he does play well in the big events. He's not afraid of the spotlight from what we've seen. So I feel like he's a guy that's just going to keep coming to majors and just playing well because he's so laid back. So he's another guy that I stuck in here at 6,900 instead of Charles Howell. And for the last group is going to be the dark horses way down here. And I have more people down here than I usually do just because there's, you know, so much talent in this field. But I don't think you should get real cute this week with your lineups because of how, you know, talented this field is. But my first cash play for a dark, I usually don't have cash play dark horses. They're usually all GBPs, but I got a few sneaky cash plays down here that I like. But Ryan Fox is the first one at 6,600 on DraftKings, and he's 7,000 on FanDuel, which I've noticed. FanDuel, it seems like they set their pricing based off of name recognition a lot. So Ryan Fox, you get these European tour guys that people don't really know. They just throw them down at the very bottom shelf here. So I really like some of these European guys, especially on FanDuel. I think you can get a lot of value there. But he was the first one that jumped out to me on both DraftKings and FanDuel. You know, out of three majors he played last year, which was the U.S. Open, the Open, and the PGA Championship, he made all three cuts. His worst finish, he didn't finish too high in any of them, but his worst finish was, you know, a tied for 41. And then when you look back at his longer stretch of majors and World Golf Championships, you know, these bigger, more important events, since 2015 he's played a nine and he's made eight of those cuts. So he just seems like a guy that, you know, like an Eddie Pepperell, that just when he gets on this big stage, he's not scared. So for 6,600 and 7,000 on FanDuel, You know, I really like Ryan Fox. The next guy who I think is going to get a lot of ownership just because his name has been around, you know, at the top of leaderboards the last couple weeks is Scott Piercy at 6,500. You know, they sent this pricing out, you know, earlier than they usually do. So after his good stretch, they can't bump him up. So his price tag is really low for how he's been playing lately. So as I could imagine, his ownership is really going to get up there. But last week at the Byron Nelson, he shot all four rounds bogey-free, which is insane. And he got to 21 under, but he still lost that to Sung Kang, who had a really good tournament at 23 under. But he was second place, Piercy was. And then a few weeks before that at the Heritage, he finished third. So at 6,500, he's coming off a second and a third place finish. He seems like a absolute no-brainer for a cash play down here. GPPs, though, I would almost fade him there because I think a lot of people are going to pick him. So you'd almost in GPPs want him to do bad just so you could have that leverage on the field. But then my last guy in this category for the dark horses cash plays, who I was on last week, Troy Merritt, 6,200, way down there on the old price chart, but he ended up in 53rd place last week at the Byron Nelson. Wasn't great, but he did shoot an opening round 65 and then 74 the next day, 9 strokes worse, but then he finished 68-69. So if he just matches his second worst round with a 69 instead of that 74, then he does get to the top 20, and then he probably looks like a great pick here coming off of a 10th place finish and a 20th place finish at 6,200. So I feel like that almost helps people find value here because he had one bad round keeping him from decently high ownership at 6,200. So I kind of like him again, but, you know, maybe people are looking at him and I just don't really see it. But great. Great cash play, even though he is coming off of that surgery in January. 6,200, you could even go GPP with him because he's so cheap, and then that's just going to open up the rest of, you know, your lineup for you to spend big. My risky plays down here for the dark horses. First one, Abraham Answer at 6,600. I've been on him a lot lately. People like him, but he hasn't been great lately. In his recent form, he shot better than 39th once in his last 9 events. So I feel like people that know golf and follow it quite a bit are just going to be off him at this point just because he's not really moving the needle for anybody. But he is 40th or within the top 40 in strokes gained off the tee, driving accuracy, proximity, scrambling, birdie or better, bogey avoidance, and par 4 scoring. So he is kind of a good matchup for this course for a guy that's 6,600. And then I'm going to look at his overall, you know, skill level and how he's played over the last year. He's got a bunch of top 10s. He's better than what he's been playing lately. So if people see his recent struggles and say, you know, he's a smaller guy, maybe he doesn't hit it very far, he hasn't been playing well, I'm not going to touch him. I'm going to stay on Abraham Answer here and say that he's going to get back to where he was in one of these tournaments. He's going to pop off again. And it could be right here when, you know, he's kind of a dark horse. So he's my first GPP play down here. My second is Ches Reavie, who's 166th in driving distance. So I feel like people, if you're looking like way down here and you're looking for your dark horse, people this week are going to be looking for bombers only. So you get a guy like Ches Reavie, they're not going to touch him. He's coming off of back-to-back top 30s. And when he was here in 2016, he was 31st place. So even though he's not real long, he's second in driving accuracy. And he's playing like pretty well lately. So at 6,600, nobody's going to be on him at all. I feel like he's a great low ownership GPP play down here at 6,600. My last guy for the risky plays down here, GPPs, is David Lipsky. He won back in December on the European Tour at the Alfred Dunhill Championship. He's been playing good golf since then, too, in the Abu Dhabi, which is a bigger European Tour event. He finished 16th at the Saudi International. The Abu Dhabi was the one that Dustin Johnson went over there and won, I believe. At the Saudi International after that, he finished 24th. At Shane Lowry won that one, I want to say. World Golf Championship Mexico, he finished 10th. And at the Corrales Punta Cana, which is a, you know, a almost a web.com tour event, he finished 22nd. So that's not as impressive, but at least he's shown that he can come over here and play as he's traveling around. So David Lipsky, 6,500, might be someone to kind of look at to, you know, kind of open up your cap space for spending in GPP plays, especially if you want to go contrarian and load up on some top guys. He's kind of one of these sneaky Europeans you can look at. The betting advice for this week, I don't really have much. You know, they moved the PGA Championship up to May instead of August. Different time of year for the major. New feel. They're at Bethpage Black, which has only hosted 4 events and never in this time of the season. So you don't really know how the course is going to handle. So it's kind of a tough one to really look at the history of this event and this course and find some kind of sneaky good betting strategies to look at this week. So I don't really have too much in that department. I'm really just going to look at the value of guys through my simulations and then play stuff off of that. But I already posted my one article that covers most of the stuff that I went over in this podcast. But I will post another one tomorrow, the 15th, the Wednesday right before the tournament, which is going to have all my betting, you know, odds to win it and my projection to win it, top 10, top 20, first round leaders, maybe some head-to-heads or something. But I will post that tomorrow with all of those numbers in it and whatnot. But that is it for this episode. You know, really like how they stretched this schedule out this year for the majors. So it's kind of exciting to have another one in May already. Looking forward to it. Good luck, everybody. I'll see you next time. Keep them in the fairway.